Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
He was a very private man in very public office. That's how biographer Garrison Nelson describes John W. McCormick, a politician from South Boston who won 22 consecutive elections to Congress, worked under six presidents from Franklin Roosevelt to Richard Nixon, and rose to become Speaker of the House during an extraordinary transformation of the Democratic Party. And yet, if not for the buildings that bear his name in Boston, McCormick is largely forgotten.
That was the plan. He did not want to be Speaker of the House. He wanted to be majority leader under Sam Rayburn, a man he adored, and certainly probably the most important speaker of the 20th century. He did not want a biography. And there's a very simple reason for this, and that was he invented a life history, which was to get elected in Massachusetts.
Garrison Nelson is a professor of law and politics at the University of Vermont who has rescued McCormick from political oblivion by writing John W. McCormick, A Political Biography. Nelson says McCormick invented a life history that he was all Irish, but he wasn't. His father was of Scottish descent. But Nelson said McCormick had a loud-mouthed, hard-drinking bootlegger brother named Nocco, who helped create the fiction that the reserve teetotaler McCormick was pure Irish.
Oh, he was a bootlegger, he was a leg breaker. Anytime you needed a nasty deed done, you called on Nocco McCormick. One time he clocked the head of the mayor of Boston, Morris Tobin. But Nocco was crucial because Nocco filled every single anti-Irish stereotype. Back in the day, there were only two routes to success in Boston. You had the sort of the Yankee Brahmin route, where you had to have a Puritan, a pilgrim ancestor, and had to go to Harvard in order to succeed, you know, clearly be a Protestant. And John's father was not only not born in Boston, wasn't born in Ireland, he was born in Canada, born in Prince Edward Island.
So he wasn't pure Irish, and you say his prospects for political advancement would have been seriously derailed if this had been fully known, right?
If your father was a Scot, yeah, which his father was. And so the contrast between John and Nocco are just staggering. And Nocco, as I say, a big, burly, you know, loud-mouthed guy, whereas John was, you know, was quiet, never without a suit, never without a clean white shirt, looked like a Presbyterian minister, quite frankly. So Nocco basically provided the Irish cover for John.
So McCormick was first elected to Congress in 1928. He rose through the ranks, worked under the great Speaker Sam Rayburn, and would go on to become Speaker. But first, tell us about what kind of congressman he was and about the political dynamics that he encountered in Washington.
He came into a Democratic Party, which is wholly controlled by the South. And the Democratic Party in 1924 had been overwhelmingly defeated, got less than 30% of the vote in the presidential election. So the Democratic Party was clearly on the ropes.
I see. And so McCormick helped sort of forge that alliance between what would become urban Democrats and Southern Democrats, which really gives new life to the Democratic Party, right?
Absolutely. And helped in large part by Franklin Roosevelt. And in 1940, when Will Bankhead, the Speaker of the House, died, Sam Rayburn was elevated to the speakership, and John McCormick was elected majority leader. And Sam Rayburn and John McCormick were the two top Democrats in the House for the next 21 years, never had a vote against them in the caucus.
Now, McCormick is elected Speaker in 1962, and you write that he became a real master of the inside game. So what kind of Speaker was he?
John was a man who basically let others take credit. Sort of Roosevelt, Truman, Kennedy, and especially Johnson take credit. He was always in the room. He was always in the room when decisions were made, but he made very little effort to sort of put himself out front. He plays a very important role, for example, in the atomic bomb funding in 1944. He actually plays a role in Kennedy's nomination. He's kind of undermined Kennedy's vice presidential bid in 1956, but in 1960 he was named by Kennedy himself to be in charge of Kennedy's convention operation. Joe Kennedy, who was basically intimidated both Jack Kennedy and John McCormick, wanted Lyndon Johnson to be on the ticket. And the only way he got Lyndon Johnson on the ticket was to get Sam Rayburn to approve it. And the only person from Massachusetts that Sam Rayburn listened to was John McCormick.
Interesting.
And, of course, without Johnson on the ticket, John Kennedy is not elected president.
It's really interesting, this relationship between McCormick and the Kennedys. You have a great story about John F. Kennedy. When he decided to give up his House seat and run for the Senate, he said, "I no longer wish to be bored by John McCormick."
That was a direct quote from Kennedy's old government professor, Sam Beer, who shared that with me one afternoon.
Yeah, really, really, really interesting. So talk a little bit about some of the extraordinary events that he oversaw, that he was in the room for, essentially, when he was Speaker, because it was quite a time in our history.
When Jack was murdered in 1963, John was, of course, the Speaker of the House, was next in line behind the Vice President. So now Johnson becomes President and McCormick is next in line. And McCormick is absolutely horrified because, you know, it's the last thing in the world he wants, of course, to be next in line. But he was the Speaker during the Great Society Congress, and which passed, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, the, you know, immigration reform, and, of course, a Civil Rights Act. So he was, you know, in the chair when all these massive Lyndon Johnson reforms took place. And Lyndon Johnson had a success rate of 93% in the House when John was Speaker.
Wow. So I want to come back to this theme of why he isn't really remembered and why he's faded into relative political oblivion. David Shribman, who used to write for the Boston Globe, is now executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post, gave your book a wonderful review. But I just want to read one part of that review. He said, "I've covered politics for the better part of 40 years, and I cannot recall McCormick's name being mentioned even once since Richard Nixon was president. The best that can be said for him is that McCormick was in the room when so many decisions and events of consequence occurred, a zealot without much zeal or zest." Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very fair. Yeah. Now, it was crucial. He had a wonderful memory. He was very smart, even though he was, you know, unschooled, only an eighth grade education. But he didn't drink. And when everyone else in the room was drinking, so consequently, the morning after, John was the only one who could actually tell them what happened in the prior night.
He was the only one without a hangover.
You got it.
Another thing I want to ask you about. So in a 1935 Boston Globe interview, McCormick said, quote, "I have no hesitancy in insisting that government, in an emergency, do everything that can be reasonably done to relieve human suffering and distress." And you call him the moral compass of the House of Representatives for his modesty, frugality, and integrity. That sounds like a pretty impressive legacy, especially when viewed through today's political lens.
Well, John, you have to understand, when John was moving up in politics, the two most dominant figures in Boston politics were John Francis Fitzgerald, a.k.a. Honey Fitz, Jack Kennedy's maternal grandfather, and his great rival for power, James Michael Curley. Fitzgerald had a flirtatious nature and was rumored to have had sort of adulterous affairs. Jim Curley didn't cheat, but Jim Curley stole from the public treasury. So McCormick had these two negative role models, and he made sure that he didn't cheat and didn't steal, and that's why I say the moral compass.
Interesting. Garrison, you spent 20 years writing this biography. Well, the first thing I want to say about that is congratulations on finishing it. But my question is why? Why did you want to write this story and devote two decades of your life to it?
Well, I met him. I met him in 1968. I had just been hired as a brand new instructor at the University of Vermont. I was all of 26 years old. I was writing my dissertation on leadership of the House of Representatives. I went down to the American Political Science Association national meeting in Washington, D.C. that year, and I went over to the Capitol Hill, you know, went into the Speaker's office, and I said, I'm a graduate student at the University of Iowa. I'm writing a dissertation about leaders of the House. Is there anyone I can talk to about Speaker McCormick? And his chief of staff said, "Would you like to talk to Speaker McCormick?" I said, "Of course." So he brought me into his office and sat down. And so I started asking him questions. So there I am, 26 years old, smoking a cigar in the sumptuous office of the Speaker of the House, a giant chandelier, me and the 76-year-old Speaker puffing away, talking about politics. Yeah, this is what you call a sort of seminal moment in my life.
So there you are, a young college kid working on your dissertation, smoking a cigar with him. Did you like him? Was he a nice presence?
Very nice. He was very, very unassuming. So I've been in the presence of multiple politicians, and I know the ones who are unassuming and the ones who basically, you know, want you to sort of, pay deference to them. John was not in that category. Very, very modest, as they say, and easy to talk to. Now, I never expected to write the book about McCormick. I kept waiting for somebody to write the book, and years would pass, and no one would write the book. Finally, in 95, 96, I was on sabbatical in Boston, and I went to the office of Eddie McCormick, the speaker's nephew, and I said I wanted to... I'm writing a book called The Austin-Boston Speakership Connection. Rather, I'm writing a chapter about your uncle. He said, why don't you write a book about my uncle? And he had withheld 6 boxes of material from the Boston University archives, which I did not know about. But Eddie was on his last legs and would die basically the following year. And one of his last requests was that I be given these 6 boxes of material.
Wow.
I had already uncovered the trail of through public documents, church records and birth and death certificates and so forth, and census records. So I'd already put together the story. But when I got these boxes, I opened them up, then I got everything I needed.
In recalling John McCormick and the way he conducted politics, the way he ran the House, does he offer any lessons for today?
Yes, he was unfailingly polite. His worst insult for a person was to say, I hold the member in minimum high regard. That was his, that was the extent of his criticism. There was a time when they got along in the House when Joe Martin, who was a Republican Speaker of the House from North Attleboro, was dumped as a leader in 1959. Joe Martin went over to Sam Rayburn's office to tell Sam, and Sam was in the middle of having a birthday party, and Joe Martin and Sam Rayburn cried on each other's shoulders. I mean, here you have the leading Democrat, the leading Republican, crying on each other's shoulders. I mean, that's a degree of comedy which you just don't see today.
Well, Garrison Nelson, he's a professor of law, politics, and political behavior at the University of Vermont. His new book is John William McCormick, A Political Biography. Garrison Nelson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anthony.
All right, and that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our program is produced by Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Bruzek, with help from Caitlin O'Keefe and Sean Bowden. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.